Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But we ask you to hold your calls for the time being. We have with us a Mr. Robert Levy. He is from the Cato Institute, and he wrote a fascinating article in the Washington Times going into the background of what's happening to our individual liberties and all of these new amazing programs that are out there, all being introduced in the name of fighting terrorism, that seem to be more interested in controlling and monitoring and checking up on the American people than they do on the Islamic terrorists. Thank you so very much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure. It's good to be with you.
Why don't you sort of pick up the story and tell us how you happened to write this letter and the things that are there that you're so concerned about.
Well, the proximate cause for writing the particular article you're referring to was the announcement of the new Total Information Awareness System, which is a, so we're told, research and development program run out of DARPA. DARPA is the Pentagon's Research and Development Agency.
Now, why would the Pentagon be monitoring American citizens?
Well, they're not, so they tell us. What they are doing is investigating how they might best monitor American citizens, in which case, if they find a best way, they might turn that over then to some other department to do the actual monitoring. So the Pentagon seems to be doing the research.
I see.
Whether or not the Pentagon would actually be doing the monitoring is anybody's guess at the moment. We haven't been told who might be the ultimate agency exercising responsibility over this system if it's finally implemented.
Now, this is Admiral Poindexter's program. Is this the one that he has been called back to duty to be in charge of?
That's correct. Admiral Poindexter, as you may recall, is the fellow who was actually convicted when the Iran-Contra imbroglio was in process, and then his conviction was later reversed because he was determined to have been convicted based upon information that should not have been used because he had been granted immunity. This all happened in 1991. Admiral Poindexter is a person who I think is unquestionably competent, and he is unquestionably capable of running a program like this. So the concern that civil libertarians have is not that he's the wrong guy to do this kind of work, but rather that this kind of work is not the kind of work that we want done, most particularly by a guy who's as capable as he is of doing this sort of thing.
And, of course, basically what they talk about is mining information, getting information from the private corporations that are collecting information on everybody, on their debt, their medical files, their legal files, certainly everything they buy in the grocery store with their discount cards, everything they buy with their credit cards, certainly every bit of information they can get, not on the Islamic terrorists coming into this country, not on Islamic people, who are supposedly involved with, but on the average American citizen. Why do they want all this information on the average American citizen? How is that going to help the war on terrorism?
Well, there are lots of concerns about DARPA. Of course, the obvious one is that the database can be misused. Of course, we're assured by the administration that it won't be misused, but, of course, that's what they told the Japanese in the 1940s when the census data were compromised and they were ultimately interned, and that's what they told taxpayers in the 1990s when they had all of their tax returns snooped for political purposes. So
that's what they told us back in the 1930s. We will never, 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 you can trust us, use your Social Security number for anything but Social Security. It's against the law. You can trust us because we're from the government and we wouldn't lie to you.
Yes, so that I think those reassurances are have to be looked at skeptically. So that's an obvious concern, that the database will be misused. It'll be misused by officials who are corrupt, and I'm not suggesting that many or all officials are corrupt, but some are. And the data can be used for personal vendetta, it can be used for bribery, it can be used for any number of illicit purposes.
So they will know your whole medical history if you've ever had a sexually transmitted disease. That'll be free and open to everybody in the entire nation. Maybe you didn't even get it, maybe you got it from your wife or husband, but that information will all be there. If you've had a bankruptcy or you've had any sort of charges or misdemeanors, or it'll all be there for somebody to use really against the individual. But why do they want all the information on what we buy, our buying habits, things like that? Yeah. Why are they collecting so much information, and what does this have to do with the war on terrorism?
Well, we are told again that the reason they need access to things like email and your web surfing habits and your phone records and your credit card and banking transactions and even your prescription drug purchases and travel data and court records, the reason they need all of that is because they're going to subject it to some very sophisticated, highly quantitative and technical data mining systems that integrate and coordinate this data and develop behavior patterns about individuals that you wouldn't know by looking at each of these items of data separately, but that you might know by looking at these items in the aggregate if you had the kind of sophisticated data gathering capability that the Pentagon is promoting. So why they need it? Well, they need it allegedly to track down terrorists. Whether or not, in fact, this is all going to make us safer, I think, is a proper concern of civil libertarians.
Well, of course,
particularly because the alleged motivation, that is, tracking down terrorism, that may indeed be what they intend to use the information for, but there are insufficient and have been insufficient a number of government programs, including the most recently passed U.S. Patriot Act, insufficient divisions of responsibility between the terrorism war and ordinary criminal enforcement. So there will be a blurring of the enforcement lines, and so you'll get a spillover into areas that are not related to terror. And traditionally, as a free country, we have been very resistant to giving government this kind of information when it comes to prosecuting ordinary criminals. And even if one were to argue that the war on terror changes the equation quite substantially, and I think it does, even if this information were justified in prosecuting the war on terror, surely we would have to draw very hard and fast lines to prevent the information from being used in ordinary law enforcement, and I don't believe that we have done so, and the history is that we will not do so.
All right, we're going to have to take a quick interruption, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Do you ever feel sort of run down, that you need more energy? Well, let me tell you about a product. It's called Be Alive Royal Jelly, and I've used this for close to 10 years, and my family has used it. We've been very, very happy with it. And recently, the company came and offered to sponsor us for a month, so we certainly agreed to that. We think it's a great, great product. It's made from the royal jelly that comes from the beehive. This is what the queen bee eats. It's sold with a money-back guarantee. If at the end of 3 months you're not completely satisfied and you don't have more energy, just give them a call. But if you'd like to get Be Alive Royal Jelly, call 1-866-233-7500. That's 1-866-233-7500. And I'm sure you're going to be very, very satisfied with the product. Okay, fine. And then I just want to mention the Alamax, which is the active ingredient in garlic. And garlic is known to lower cholesterol. It's known to certainly lower your blood pressure. It seems to help as far as your immunity is concerned, at least as far as preventing colds. There are studies over in England. If you'd like to get the active ingredient in garlic, far more than you could ever actually eat by yourself, pure Allison product, call 1-866-405-4000. That's 1-866-405-4000. The product is called Alamax, and of course, it is the active ingredient in garlic. Mm-hmm. We have a brand new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, but blacked out across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. We're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. We're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, What Really Happened, it will give you the opportunity to see long-suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, What Really Happened. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest today is Mr. Robert Levy from the Cato Institute back there in Washington, D.C. And is it Washington, D.C. or Virginia?
Well, the Cato Institute is in Washington, D.C., but I'm talking to you tonight from Naples, Florida.
Florida, okay. Well, anyway, of course, we were talking about the DARPA, and of course this idea of massive information gathering, they call it electronic mining, and they're going to get every bit of electronic data. Now, they're not doing this on the Islamic terrorists. You have to understand this. This is on the average American citizen. In fact, I don't see any real effort there on their part to get information on Middle Easterners any more than on everybody in America. They're going to do this for everybody, aren't they?
It is proposed that they will effectively be developing dossiers on 250 Americans.
Okay, fine.
Including, I think, as much data as they can get on Middle Easterners and others, but not excluding all the rest of us.
And, of course, this is the real thing that I'm concerned about, and I suspect you are, too. The USA Patriot Act that was passed just 46 days after September 11th attack. Really amazing to get that thing through all the, first of all, to get the bill, this intricate bill written, and then, of course, to get it heard in committees, and then, of course, to get it through both the Senate and the House in 46 days. That's really pretty fast, isn't it, for such a complicated, far-reaching legislation, the USA Patriot Act?
Well, it's less time than Congress typically expends on routine bills that don't raise any constitutional concerns, and the Patriot Act certainly raised quite a number. Congress is supposed to be this deliberative body that cushions us from the passions of the moment.
Well, this was really passed on the passion of the moment when everybody in Congress was frightened to death because of the anthrax attack, and, of course, everybody is just frightened. And if you voted against the Patriot Act, it's almost like you're unpatriotic.
Yes, that's exactly right. It was 98-1 in the Senate. Only Senator Russ Feingold, the Democrat from Wisconsin, opposed the Patriot Act, and it was 357-66 in the House. So that's not exactly a close horse race.
And, of course, I know that Senator Byrd has said he's sorry he ever voted for it. He wished he never had because of the far-reaching implications. Understanding what this is, what's wrong with the USA Patriot Act? Isn't it to preserve patriotism and preserve the flag and all that, or does it have more sinister implications?
I think it has more sinister implications. It is devoted to helping prosecute the war on terror, but as in many well-meaning laws, it pushes the envelope a bit too far.
But it doesn't even mention Islamic terrorism, does it? It sort of redefines terrorism so that anybody who opposes, wants to change our form of government is a terrorist. And that could be anybody maybe who even wants to preserve our constitutional system, because the definition is so vague, almost anybody could be a terrorist under this. Certainly it doesn't say anything about Islamic terrorism, does it?
No, it does not. It defines this in terms of the most broad strokes possible, and the concerns that many of us have is that not only will this be used in prosecuting the so-called war on terror that arose out of 9/11, but it will be used to prosecute many other infractions, including things like drug trafficking and the like, which are ordinarily, aside from the fact that they shouldn't be infractions at all, they are ordinarily left at least to the civilian law enforcement authorities and not subjected to a different set of rules, a looser set of rules, or a set of rules that give this government a good deal more in the way of power because of the war on terror.
What are these sneak and peek searches that they can do in violation of the Fourth Amendment? What's that all about?
Well, that's under Section 213 of the Act, they have these secret sneak and peek searches, and basically they can search physical property without the knowledge of the property owner. They don't have to give the property owner notice until some reasonable period of time after the search has occurred. Of course, when you don't have knowledge, then you don't have an opportunity to contest the validity of the search, and that could include such obvious problems as the police rummaging through office drawers when the warrant authorizes a garage search, you know, or even searching the wrong address. If you don't know about the search, you can't say, "Hey, show me that warrant," and point out the fact that that warrant doesn't authorize you to do this.
Well, no, of course, do they have to have a warrant for this, or can they pretty well do what they want to in the war on terrorism, that is?
They have to have warrants, but the warrants are being issued now under quite a different authority than is usually the case from an Article III court. under the Fourth Amendment, you have to have probable cause to have a judge or a magistrate issue a warrant. Under the new rules, under the Patriot Act, it still is a court that's run by Article III judges, but it's the Foreign Intelligence and Surveillance Act court, the FISA court, F-I-S-A, and it has a quite different standard than ordinary courts.
You don't even have to have probable cause there, do you?
Right. You have to have probable cause only to suspect that somebody is operating on behalf of a foreign power or a terrorist organization. You don't have to have probable cause that there's been a crime committed.
All right, fine. And so what they've done is the sweeping power that really repeals the Fourth Amendment, which, of course, is one of the things that kept, government, people in government from misusing their power. And, of course, people say, well, government never would misuse its power. But, of course, that's the history of governments down throughout all ages. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. And the police, or certainly certain law enforcement officials, have tried to get this sort of legislation through in the past, haven't they? Didn't they try to get this through after the Oklahoma City bombing and the Congress wouldn't give it to them?
Yes, there have been repeated attempts to expand the authority of the Justice Department, for example, in criminal prosecutions, particularly as a result of the war on drugs. And now, of course, there is this rationale that seems to resonate with the American public, and the American public seems willing, for reasons that frankly escape me, to allow the Justice Department to have relatively free rein in these matters.
Well, now, of course, the administration wanted to set up this informant program like they have in Cuba or Communist China or the Stasi had in East Germany, the so-called TIPS program, where, of course, we would get your mailman and your meter reader and your UPS driver and all these people to begin spying on other Americans. And actually, didn't Dick Armey actually insert something in the Homeland Security bill that they couldn't put that into effect, but the fact that they would want that sort of, really a totalitarian control and informant system, that was what was most frightening, whether that, they're able to get it through or not at this time. It's obviously something that they're thinking about, everybody spying on everybody else. What was the TIPS program about?
Well, initially, and TIPS stood for Terrorism Information and Prevention System. It was the brainchild in the war against terror, and my characterization is that it was crafted to transform us into a nation of meddlers and busybodies and snoops, and each of us end up spying on the rest. And the original program was to recruit 1 million volunteers to serve as effectively as government informants.
Like they have in East Germany.
Yes.
They didn't even have that many in the Stasi, did they?
I don't believe they had that many. The ultimate plan was to enroll 4% of all Americans. That would be about 11 million. The so-called, my characterization again, domestic spies across the nation. And the focus, the thing that scared people, that were worried about the TIPS program, is that the focus was going to be to sort of deputize these folks that would have unique access to private homes, like mail carriers and utility employees and meter readers and the like. And, of course, if that happens, you end up getting people who come into your home under false pretenses and basically turning their reports over to the government to be entered into yet one more database containing the names of people who haven't been charged with anything. And that data is maintained by the Justice Department and then distributed to state and local authorities for who knows what purpose. You would think if they just wanted people to report questionable items, they would just publish a phone number and say, if you see something that's suspicious, then call us. But that's not what they did. And those of us who were concerned about tips were worried about what always happens. That is, there are unintended consequences. We end up with people rummaging around our private residence, filing reports with the Justice Department, and that effectively circumvents the Fourth Amendment probable cause requirement. And basically, it smothers the Justice Department with an avalanche of absolutely worthless information.
But of course, the thing that they would even consider something like that in a free society, you begin to realize there are people in Washington, D.C. who don't believe in a free society, and they are using the pretext of fighting terrorism. Maybe some of the people really do believe that's how we're going to fight terrorism. But of course, in the process, the terrorists win because freedom as we know it is lost.
Yeah, and the concern I have is not so much that President Bush doesn't respect the Constitution. I mean, I think he's an honorable guy, and I think he knows the Constitution is made of something more than tissue paper. But even for those folks who believe in President Bush, and even for those folks who believe in John Ashcroft, they have to be concerned about the precedent that's being established here. Even if you're a Republican, even if you're a Bush fan, you have to wonder about this kind of power residing in the hands of somebody who might succeed Bush. Or imagine if this kind of power resided in the hands of the guy who preceded Bush.
How about if it was in the woman who may succeed him, Hillary Clinton? How would you like to have Hillary have that sort of power? Because, of course, she was totally ruthless in everything she did. And there, anybody who's ever read Unlimited Access, the story of Hillary Clinton in the White House written by Gary Aldrich, realized that this is a very, very, very wicked woman in my estimation.
Well, fortunately, the TIPS program, first it was watered down. The administration conceded that they might have overreached, and they said that, well, we won't include truckers, we won't include the mail carriers and utility workers. We'll only include people like truckers and dock workers and bus drivers who get around a lot, even though they don't come into your homes. And they also said we won't include a central database. We'll just have a clearinghouse of information that we'll send out to the other agencies. Finally, mostly because of Dick Armey, the Homeland Security Act in November banned tips, and that I think is a major step.
And I really congratulate Dick Armey for putting that in, so that no way were they going to allow that to get through. And yeah, if it hadn't been for Dick Armey, I really think it would have gotten through. What do you think?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I think he was certainly a major factor in seeing to it that it did not get through.
All right, fine. So we're going to be back here in just a moment here, and this is the moment I certainly want to tell our listeners that if you'd like to really have some insight into what's going on in the world today, let me suggest that you get some of the material we have. I think probably the most important book we carry was written by Bill Clinton's mentor. It was written by Professor Carol Quigley, a liberal historian. It's Harvard and Princeton before he went to a Georgetown University, where one of his prize students was William Jefferson Clinton. The book is 342 pages in length. It was so effective that somebody bought up the publisher, Macmillan Company, and destroyed the plates to the first half of the book. Now, if that sounds like an absurd thing to you, and that doesn't happen in America, we have an interview with Professor Quigley in our Secret Government 4-tape set that tells you that story, or you can get the Tragedy and Hope special and specifically request that. You'll get Tragedy and Hope. You'll get The Foundations, Their Power and Influence, another repressed book, and, of course, the interview with Professor Quigley. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our 4-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this afternoon is Mr. Robert Levy. He's from the Cato Institute. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call us, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. Do you want to put out the website or any information on the Cato Institute as long as we have you with us?
Yes, the Cato Institute website is www.cato's, that's spelled C-A-T-O, .org, and it's a wealth of information on all sorts of public policy questions, including the civil liberties, national security questions, but also including things like Social Security privatization and school choice and welfare reform, tax policy, budget policy, natural resources, energy. You name it, we cover it.
And, of course, more or less a libertarian website. Would that be a fair appraisal of it?
Yes, it is a fair characterization.
All right, fine. Well, of course, there are so many various programs that are being put out today in the name of the war on terrorism. And, of course, one of these is the Office of Homeland Security that is going to take 22 agencies, 170,000 civil service employees, take away their whistleblower protection, really alter the entire structure of government. And, of course, what frightens me, and I think frightens Senator Byrd, who spoke very strongly against this, is it does away with this whole concept of checks and balances. It's sort of this is an agency unto itself, and really you're not going to have the oversight that we've had from our duly elected representatives. What's your take on the Office of Homeland Security, and is this a good or bad thing?
Well, I think it's a little early to say. I wish I had some insight in this regard, but I do think if it's no more than making government administratively more efficient, that's not all bad. If, however, it's a focus of power, concentration of power, where ordinarily we prefer a division of power because of the usual separations that prevent abuse of power, then that's some concern. So we really have to see whether or not we are basically in dealing with administrative efficiency or are we dealing with concentrated power. My fear is that it's moving in the direction of concentrated power, but I do think it's premature to make the final judgment in that regard.
But history tells us, that when you have too much government and too much concentration of power, it's always misused. I mean, Diocletian, back in 300 A.D., it divided the Roman Empire into several areas, into two parts, because he realized you couldn't administer the whole thing from one centralized place. And here you're taking 22 agencies and combining them, and supposedly this is going to lead to efficiency?
Yes, well, it is of great concern. I remember Milton Friedman's remark when somebody questioned him about how inefficient government was, and he said, thank goodness, because if government ever spent the kind of money they spent in an efficient manner, we wouldn't have any of our freedoms left. But I think there's going to be some insight in this regard, because there's been recently a suit by the Electronic Privacy Information Center, that's EPIC, E-P-I-C, that demanded information from the Office of Homeland Security regarding their program, if they had one, on national ID cards and trusted traveler programs. And a judge in the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., just this month, held that the information must be provided unless the Homeland Security Office could prove that it only operated in an advisory capacity and it wasn't actually an agency. Now, the criteria for agency is that if it instructs other agencies or if it approves of agency projects, then it's an agency. If it only gives advice to the executive branch, then it's advisory. If it's an agency, it has to make certain disclosures that it wouldn't have to make if it was just advisory. Now, I think once Homeland Security is a new federal department, which happens on the 24th of this month, all of this becomes moot, because at that point it most certainly is going to be an agent, an agency, and it will have to make certain disclosures. So we may have some insight into what it is that's going on there.
Well, the thing that I think disturbs a lot of people is, first of all, the secrecy. I mean, the Bush administration has clamped down on freedom of information, even under the Clinton administration, as bad as it was. You know, at least you could get information, freedom of information, where George Bush has said he will back government employees who do not fill legal requests. Now, we have the, you know, to allow people to know what government is doing. You can get the information under freedom of information. But it appears that this government, this administration, wants to act in total secrecy, not to keep the information from the Islamic terrorists, but to keep the American citizens, law-abiding citizens, from finding out what the government's doing. Is there any concern about that?
Well, sure. The freedom of, and it's not just this administration. It's, you know, it's a whole litany of a long list of administrations that have resisted entreaties for information under the Freedom of Information Act. And indeed, the Freedom of Information Act is not the most crystalline statute that's ever been drafted. There are lots of exceptions in the Freedom of Information Act, one for secrecy, of course, that's national security-related information, one for information that's so-called part of the deliberative process, that's the advisory-type information, for example, that that the Homeland Security Office claims that they were providing, not active-type information, but merely passive information in a consultative role. So the murkiness of the FOIA statute, Freedom of Information Act, has led to a long list of disputes over that. But it is true that this administration in particular seems inclined to be as secretive as possible. They attribute that to the needs of prosecuting the war on terror, but I think government in the open is a much safer government for all of us.
Well, if there's nothing to conceal, I really wonder why they want to conceal it so much. And, you know, we see this with the effort to investigate what happened on September 11th. And so much of the information is all classified. I guess that we don't want Osama bin Laden to find out what we know about it. Well, let's go to Roger calling from Allentown. Roger, you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have two. Well, first, just kind of a comment I want to bounce off. And I see what my impression of this homeland security business is, that it's going to just serve to reinforce an already too well-functioning information containment apparatus.
Okay. Did you have a question?
Yeah. One of the things that I don't think I hardly ever hear any criticism of is Congress in this bill and the Patriot Act, etc. They just cannot quickly enough seem to pair off their legislative and oversight functions over to the executive, the president. And I think that's just very dangerous. Now, they also give exclusive control of immigration numbers, I believe, over to the president, whereas before you had at least the possibility of congressional oversight. And that's just one item of many, if you care to comment on that.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Roger. Well, okay, well, what are your thoughts on what Roger was saying?
I agree with that entirely. I think there's a tendency to criticize, and I confess that I succumb to this as well, to criticize the executive branch for seizing too much power. But after all, it is a responsibility of Congress to provide an oversight role, and they have been derelict in exercising that responsibility. And I think Congress feels like all they have to do is sit back passively, and if any mistakes are made, you can blame it on the executive branch, and Congress doesn't take any of the heat. And that's why we have virtually no legislation in this regard. The only legislation we have is the Patriot Act, and now the Homeland Security Act. The Patriot Act, as we've already said, was pushed through Congress without any deliberation whatsoever and effectively assigned lots and lots of power to the executive branch. The Homeland Security Act is doing the same thing. We have had no legislation regarding such things as military tribunals, where Congress ought to be setting the rules. We haven't heard anything about the various privacy proposals like TIPS and like total information awareness. We've had nothing in the way of profiling or national ID cards. Congress has really been derelict in challenging the administration and making sure that the administration doesn't overreach its constitutional constraints.
Well, you know, in the name of fighting terrorism, you know, it's one thing when you have enemy combatants, but, you know, when you have American citizens who are not allowed habeas corpus or free access to their lawyers and things like that, you know, this is rather disconcerting. As long as you say that they're an enemy combatant, why, of course, They don't have a right to get information out. They don't have a right to defend themselves. And once you remove the right of habeas corpus, even for somebody like Padilla, who is certainly has sort of a criminal background, converted to the Muslim faith, and we may not like Padilla, but if we take away his freedom in the name of expediency, who else's freedom will we take away in the name of expediency?
Yes, we have two of these fellows who are U.S. citizens, and oddly enough, they have been treated quite a bit worse than others in comparable circumstances who are not U.S. citizens. We have Hamdi, Yasser Hamdi. He's been detained without an attorney, without virtually incommunicado, without being charged with a crime. We have Padilla. Padilla wasn't even, Hamdi was captured on the battlefield in Afghanistan.
He just arrived in the United States, and we're told that somebody said that he was going to build a dirty bomb, and of
right.
course, but he's not allowed to defend himself.
Yes, and then on the other hand, we have Massawi, who's supposedly the 20th hijacker. He's not a U.S. citizen. Richard Reed, the shoe bomber. Both of these guys have attorneys. Both of them are charged before civilian courts, not military courts. So we have two citizens and two non-citizens. And apparently the administration is suggesting that constitutional rights like habeas corpus, which requires that the administration justify any continued detentions of people, and the Sixth Amendment, which requires a speedy and public jury trial with the assistance of counsel, the administration says, well, we don't have to do that for citizens. But they then turn around and they do extend those rights to non-citizens. It's a very strange
situation. Well, let's go to Kenneth. Hi, Kenneth. Where are you calling from?
South Carolina.
Okay, Kenneth, you have a question. What part of South Carolina?
Mount Pleasant, down near Charleston.
Sure, okay. Well, what have a question or comment?
Yes, I'd like to ask your guest, if, let's say, the Israeli-Arab problem had been solved 10 years ago, do you think that what happened to the Twin Towers would not have happened?
Well, of course, that's a tough question. I do think a couple of things about that. First, there does seem to be a cultural chasm between the values that are held dear by a free society like the United States and the values of radical Islam. And that culture gap would have existed with or without the problems in between Israel and the Palestinians.
Well,
so that would suggest that we would have had these kinds of problems.
Well, I'm not anti-Israel. I happen to be Jewish.
Yes.
So,
well, if you get my material on the background of this whole Islamic terrorist movement, or how we spent $56 million funding this whole radical Islamic idea, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Ask for a copy of the
okay.
Washington Post article on USAID, financing of education, teaching young Muslim children how wonderful it was to kill the infidels, die for Allah, and taught them their mathematics, you know. Two bombs, three missiles, and four landmines is how many weapons?
Can I ask, just make one more quick point?
Okay, we're
Paul,
just...
Paul Craig Roberts on his website, you know who Paul Craig Roberts
right,
is?
Right, uh-huh.
He had said that that we ought to bring all of the Israeli Jews to the United States and let the Arabs just have that part of the world.
Well, let's get us out of the problem. Well, hey, we've got to go to our break.
What do you think?
Well, we're going to go to break right now. Do you want to hang on?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. This is Dr. Stan. And, of course, this is the time when we have to tell you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we certainly hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will decide right now that you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. And for a suggested gift of at least $20 a month or more, as much as you can afford, you'll get our four best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do 5 hours every day on radio and 5 hours on internet and 3 hours on satellite and 2 hours on shortwave, and that is reach out with a different slant on the news that you're going to get elsewhere. So, you know, if you believe in what we're doing, if you believe there's a problem and you'd like to help us get the information out, because behind everything that's going on, there are spiritual forces. This is a spiritual battle, and you can't just look at it in black and white, you know, Muslim against American or Muslim against the West, the spiritual forces which influence both sides are what's responsible for what's happening. So go to our website at radioliberty.com. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, our December newsletter goes into the background of our financial situation, and I believe a lot of what's happening now in the coming war in the Middle East has to do with a distraction, because, of course, as we move into financial chaos in America, then we can blame it on the wicked Saddam Hussein. It's not the Democrats' fault. It's not the Republicans' fault. It's the wicked Saddam Hussein that brought all these terrible things on us. And if you read my newsletter, get into the background, the history of our monetary system, how it came about and where we're going. I think you'll be surprised. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, for America truly is at war today. Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Robert Levy from the Cato Institute. We have Kenneth calling from South Carolina, and he says maybe we ought to bring all the Jews in Israel back to America, and then we'd solve the problem. Kenneth, I think that's the dumbest idea I ever heard of. First of all, I don't think the Jews want to leave Israel. I think that many of them feel that's their homeland, and they're going to stay there.
Well, I'm Jewish, and what I'm saying is that was an article on Paul Craig Roberts' website.
I was surprised that he would come up with something that dumb. Do you have any thoughts on that at all, Robert?
Of course, the initial reaction is the one that you just expressed, namely, suppose they don't want to be brought back. So when you say bring back, it sounds like somebody's going to get out there and issue some edict that says all the Jews must leave Israel and come back to the United States. They haven't been prevented from coming to the United States, to my knowledge. So those that are in Israel are there because they want to be there.
And because they really believe in this dream of their homeland. And I think that the problem is we've got too many people who want to solve somebody else's problem. That's what the liberals do. Boy, we've got a good problem. America's going to give money here, there, elsewhere. We're going to have troops throughout the world. America's going to solve their problems. And every time we try to solve them, we make it worse. There's no problem facing America, the world today, that a new government program won't make worse. Hey, we got to run. Thanks so much, Kenneth, and let's go to Charlie. Hi, Charlie. Where are you calling from?
Pittsburgh.
Okay, question or comment?
Yeah, I guess the question. By the way, I ordered your book, Dr. Stan, Brotherhood of Darkness.
Well,
I'm looking forward to getting it.
Okay, I hope you enjoy it. It says in the foreword to the book that if you read this through, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. I've had a couple of talk show hosts who told me that they saw that and they said, sure, sure. And they read the book and they never have looked at the world through the same eyes again. So hope you enjoy it.
Well, I've been reading another book. It's an old one. It's called None Dare Call It Treason, 25 Years Later. And there's a reoccurring theme in there, and this is kind of my question. It seems like that Congress never actually has their finger on the pulse of what's going on only after it's too late. And I just wanted to point out that what went on there with this impeachment thing in the United States Senate, that you would think these people, if they really had any morals or any ethics at all, they would all have stepped aside as being compromised and actually let somebody go in there and do what should be done. You see where they find Luttrell, and I forget what this other company was, that sold the Cray supercomputers and all this technology to China, and now it's went over into Korea where they've allowed them to develop these missiles that can now threaten us. Somebody should go to jail for that, not be fined $20 million. Don't you agree?
Well, I think you have to read my book to understand what this is all about, because nothing as it appears to be. But let's get Mr. Levy's response to what you said.
Well, as somebody who whose specialty is, I don't claim much expertise in that area. I must say, I thought the impeachment debacle was much to be regretted and disgraceful. But I'm not sure that it has a great deal to do with the kinds of civil liberties problems we're experiencing today.
And let me just suggest to you, Charlie, that nothing is as it appears to be. If you really think that we, gave all the missile technology and all the scientific material and, the restricted material to China simply for a few campaign contributions, I think you're wrong. I mean, well, there is another agenda behind the whole thing, but read the book and then call me, okay?
Well, Dr. Stan, even if that's the case, it doesn't matter. I don't see where it really matters whether somebody made trillions of dollars or whether they didn't or whatever. The point is that these people are, in my opinion, and I'm not a constitutional scholar either, but I mean, you can see that they have damaged, somebody has damaged us by what they have done, and somebody is in the government, and it should be looked into, and those people, the laws that they have should be applied to them. Don't you agree?
Well, I agree with you totally, but you think just by chance, occasionally they'd make a mistake in our favor, and they never seem to do that. I wonder why.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Okay. And that was, of course, Charlie calling from Pennsylvania, and we've got somebody coming on here in just a moment, I believe. It's Jeannie, and let's see where Jeannie's coming from. If we can screen Jeannie through, why, we'll put her on the line. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, Doctor.
Hi, how are you doing? Well, this is Jeannie from Aptos. I recognize that voice. Did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have that New England twang.
Right.
I want to make a comment. There was a book I just read, Journey into the Whirlwind, and there was a lady, Eugenia Ginsburg, and she was put into a concentration camp at the time of Stalin. But it was very interesting reading because she was charged with belonging to a right-wing group, and also she was charged with terrorism. And she was brought before a military tribunal. This is in Stalin's time, about 1937-38.
Sounds like sort of what is going on now, of course. They've redefined terrorism, and of course they want to use... It seems the Bush administration is dead set on using military courts on American citizens charged with terrorism, not even necessarily on terrorists charged with terrorism, military tribunals for them, but for American citizens.
Well, I am a Republican, but I am very concerned about Ashcroft and Bush getting together and creating this fascist agenda. I might say, and it's not said very often, in Hitler's time they had the SS, and in German it's called Schutzstaffel. And if you go into your German dictionary, Schutz is protection, and Staffel is home defense squadron. And I believe they are following the same blueprint as Stalin and Hitler.
Well, it's very interesting that apparently our current federal gun laws, at least the initial ones, were actually the German ones that were translated into English and imposed here. This is G. Gordon Liddy's latest book, When I Was a Kid, America Was Free, and he talks about how Senator Dodd actually just got the German gun laws translated into English. Have you ever heard that, Robert?
I haven't heard that point, but I would like to comment on two aspects of this, one the gun laws and the other the military tribunals.
Right.
I think the administration's proposal on military tribunals is it misses the boat in several key areas. Tribunals, to the extent that they have any validity whatsoever, they should be convened only outside the United States, and of course the proposal that the president's made does not limit it to outside the United States. I don't think it's entirely objectionable to have military tribunals down in Guantanamo, for example, for people who are apprehended on the battlefield and who have been involved in a shooting war with Americans. We can't have a civilian trial in a U.S. court for everybody that's captured in a war. So a tribunal might be appropriate, but it's not appropriate here in the United States when our courts are running, and it's particularly not appropriate when they're used against U.S. citizens.
Why would the American president even suggest that sort of a thing?
Yes, it is very strange. Now, the president's original proposal did say non-citizens, so there's not much likelihood, unless that proposal's changed, which of course it could be, since it was unilateral to begin with. It could be changed unilaterally as well. It could be changed to cover citizens as well as non-citizens. But even non-citizens, if they're resident aliens, permanent aliens, they have certain constitutional rights. Finally, I think that these tribunals, if they're going to be used, they should be congressionally authorized, not decreed by the executive branch.
But why is Congress allowing this? Because we should have a system of checks and balances. It seems we have no checks and balances. We have an all-power executive branch of government, which is exactly what our founding fathers feared.
Yes, that's correct. And the one other aspect of your caller's comments that I would like to just mention is the gun laws, and that is that I'm happy to report that in Washington, D.C., there will be a suit filed shortly in federal court, a suit in civil court, contesting the Washington, D.C. ban on handguns on Second Amendment grounds. Washington, D.C. is a particularly interesting jurisdiction because it has draconian gun laws. No one is allowed to register or possess a handgun in Washington, D.C., even in the privacy of your own home. If you have a shotgun or a rifle in your home, it has to be disassembled and unloaded. So you can imagine how useful it is to defend yourself. Well, that ban is going to be contested, and D.C. also has felonies prosecuted by the Justice Department, which assertively has said that the Second Amendment is an important constitutional right that belongs to each of us as an individual. So maybe we will be able to hold the Justice Department's feet to the fire a little bit and find out how they really stand on the Second Amendment.
Well, I think, you know, all we need to do is look and see what happens when you take away the right of the people to have a weapon. We see this, what's happened in England. England now is one of the highest crime rates in the world because everybody is disarmed except for the criminals, and that's true in Washington, D.C.
I mean, well, sure. I mean,
if people, you know, here in the nation's capital, you know, it was really, really at nighttime, you certainly wouldn't want to walk in parts of that town. But if people were armed, you know, the robbers would not have free rein. And, you know, before you start collecting the weapons, first of all, you had to have a 30-day period where all the criminals have to turn in their weapons first so that the law-abiding citizens aren't left unarmed. But, of course, the criminals aren't going to turn in their weapons. And so all you're doing is really making every law-abiding citizen subject to, terror. I mean, talk about terrorism. Living in Washington, D.C., it would be a terrorist experience.
That's exactly right. And you can see the current experience going on in Canada where they've had gun registration. Of course, they've also had escalating violence, gun-related violence, and a huge waste of money, which has resulted in nothing but prosecuting law-abiding citizens.
But, of course, in any society, you know, if you want to enslave the people, you disarm them. I mean, this is the way it was in ancient Rome, and certainly here in the United States, a black could not own a weapon. In Israel today, a Palestinian, even if he's an Israeli citizen, can't own a weapon. Why?
Yeah.
That is how you maintain your authoritarian control over the people. I don't think these gun control people are stupid. I think they know exactly what they're doing. I think it's just that they don't want the American people to know what they're up to.
Yes, well, I think you're right on the mark.
God bless you. Well, thank you. Jeannie, thank you so much for being with us.
I just want to say we ought to bring every single congressman back home and have them work for a living except Ron Paul. He should stay there.
All right, fine. And what we ought to do is take all the armed guards out of the Congressional Office Building. Right. Thanks so very much. And thank you so much for being with us, Robert. It's been a real, real pleasure, and hope we can get you back on one of the other programs again.
Anytime. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That was Robert Levy from the Cato Institute. I hope you enjoyed what he had to say. Hope you noticed what he has to say, because he's right on the front lines of this battle, trying to get the information out across America. And, of course, we ask you to pray for America, because we're in real trouble. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival in America, because if the American people don't turn back to God, God is going to turn his back on America forever. And the freedoms that we've enjoyed here will simply become a remembrance of things past. And then, of course, we ask you to remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our ministry and for our staff, for our provision and protection. And so until, well, tomorrow at the same time when we'll be back with you, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
was a very interesting program.
Sorry? Oh, that was an excellent program.
Yeah, that was very good.